Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Big E here. This is Law for Virginia Law Enforcement Officers, and it's episode 92. We're talking about a new ruling from the Court of Appeals of Virginia, which says that finding an open container of alcohol in a vehicle is not probable cause to search the vehicle. Except the Court of Appeals also ruled that finding an open container in a vehicle is probable cause to search a vehicle for more alcohol. What? Okay, this is a really interesting set of rulings, and I think it's a great chance for us to talk not just about the statute and probable cause and search, but also a good chance to talk about articulation, about collecting evidence during a traffic stop, and also kind of how the Court of Appeals works. Because this set of cases, two different cases with two pretty much diametrically opposed rulings issued the same week by the same Court of Appeals, actually gives us a good chance to talk about how the Court of Appeals is actually structured, how they reach their decisions, who reaches what decisions, and what the difference between a published and unpublished case is. Lots of different things, I think, that we don't focus a lot on this podcast. We sort of just say, the Court of Appeals said this, or the Court of Appeals said that, without really stepping back and saying, well, what does that really mean? Is that ruling binding? Who made the decision? What does it mean when we say the Court of Appeals? So we're going to talk about all of that today, and also talk about the actual rulings themselves and the statute that's at stake. Because all of them, I think, are really interesting and have some consequences for you as law enforcement in Virginia. So to start with, what are we talking about? We're talking about the Virginia Code section that makes it unlawful to drink while operating a motor vehicle. Now, to start with, remember, we're not talking about the DUI code section, the driving under the influence or driving while intoxicated code section. That's 18.2266. That's a totally different code section. And none of what we're going to talk about today really deals with that offense. And we're also not talking about public intoxication either, which, you know, ostensibly the standard for public intoxication and DUI are the same, right? That the alcohol has in some manner affected your speech, movement, reaction time, et cetera, that you are affected by the alcohol. One is just being in public, that's the drunken public offense, and one is while operating a motor vehicle, that's DUI. And we also have a presumption that if you're 0.08 or above, that you are under the influence of alcohol. But all of that aside, we also have a totally different code section, which is 18.2.323.1. Now, by the way, I'm not talking about 18.2.323.01. That is prohibition against the disposal of a dead body on private property without permission of the landowner or on public property. That's a class 1 misdemeanor. That's not the code section we're talking about today. That's 323.01. Today we're talking about 323.1. And 18.2.323.1 is the code section that makes it unlawful for a person to consume any alcoholic beverage while operating a motor vehicle on the public highway of Virginia. Not intoxication, not getting under the influence, just, you know, sipping a sip of a beer while you're driving is unlawful in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Now, this is an offense that applies to the driver, not passengers, and that'll be important for this case. And violation is, just like public intoxication, a class 4 misdemeanor. And by the way, we have a similar offense for marijuana now, although it's not treated the same. It's not punishable as a class 4 misdemeanor. It's punishable as a civil fine. So it's not exactly the same, treated the same. But here, this is a class 4 misdemeanor, so up to a $250 fine, unlike the marijuana offense. So that's the offense, right? Just consuming an alcoholic beverage while driving a vehicle on a public highway is a class 4 misdemeanor. Period, end of story. Seems pretty simple, right? Well, then where do we get this whole bit about the open container in vehicles? Because I think everybody, you know, sort of has heard and may or may not believe you can't have an open container of alcohol in the passenger compartment of your vehicle. Well, it's not really what the law is in Virginia, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about this. And to be honest with you, as a prosecutor, I didn't really know what the law was for years. So what does the law say about open containers of alcohol in vehicles? What the law says is, and this is in the statute, unless the driver is delivering alcoholic beverages lawfully under the ABC code section, there's a rebuttable presumption that the driver has consumed an alcoholic beverage in violation of the code section if three things are true. One is an open container is located within the passenger area of the motor vehicle. Two, the alcoholic beverage in the open container has been at least partially removed. And three, the appearance, conduct, odor, speech, or other physical characteristic of the driver of the motor vehicle may be reasonably associated with the consumption of an alcoholic beverage. So it creates a rebuttable presumption. What does that mean, rebuttable presumption? Well, we're going to get into that when we talk about these two cases. But suffice to say, the idea is that it gives the presumption, or you basically can assume that somebody has consumed it if the container is open, it's in the passenger area, there's some alcohol missing, and they appear to have consumed alcohol, right? And passenger area is not the trunk, it's not the area behind the last seat of the passenger van. This is all defined in the code section. It's not important for our conversation today, but the difference between passenger area and not passenger area is defined in the statute. And an open container is any vessel containing an alcoholic beverage except the originally sealed manufacturer's container. So, if you have a seal, anything from a sealed airplane bottle to a can of beer to a wine bottle is fine, but if it's not originally sealed, then it's considered to be an open container. So taking a cork out of a wine bottle and putting it back in again, it's now an open container. So it's not unlawful to carry an open container in your vehicle. It's just that if you have the open container and there's some alcohol missing and also the driver appears to have consumed alcohol, then you can assume that they have consumed an alcohol beverage while operating a motor vehicle. But again, if you haven't consumed an alcoholic beverage and you've got an open container in a vehicle, well, then what, right? That's what these two cases today from the Court of Appeals last week are talking about. So let's start out by talking about the first of these cases, and that is a case from Virginia Beach. And this is a case where the defendant had a firearm, he had drugs, he was intending to sell the drugs, he was a convicted violent felon, he was carrying a gun concealed, he was up to a lot of nefarious activity. And an officer notices him because he's driving has an expired license plate. The defendant is the only person inside the vehicle, and he's parked in a handicapped spot in a convenience store parking lot. So an officer walks up to the vehicle, and another officer walks up to the passenger side, and they ask to speak to the defendant, and he immediately sort of moving stuff around inside the vehicle and says, "This isn't my car, it's my stepdad's car." And at that moment, one of the officers sees a bottle of liquor on the passenger side floorboard near the center console. The cap is screwed onto the bottle, but less than a quarter of the bottle's contents remained. So an officer asks the defendant about the bottle, and he says, "I haven't been drinking, I will take a breathalyzer." And the officer says, "All right, get out of the car. I'm going to search the car based on probable cause." And the question is, all right, probable cause of what, right? What do you have probable cause of? Well, here the officer says, "Well, my probable cause is that you have been drinking while operating a motor vehicle. You've got an open container while operating a motor vehicle. And, so that gives me probable cause to believe there might be more alcohol. I'm going to search this vehicle." So what's his probable cause that this guy, that the defendant here, has been consuming alcohol while driving? Well, to start with, he noted that the defendant had an odd manner of speech, and he couldn't determine if that was simply his normal speech, or if he had a lisp, or if he'd possibly been drinking. This becomes an important fact in this case. The other officer at the scene, the backup officer, also says that his speech pattern was consistent with somebody that he believed at the time either had used alcohol or drugs or had a speech impediment. One of the three, basically. Neither of officer had knew the defendant, had ever talked to him before. And remember, they hadn't seen him driving. They hadn't observed any unusual driving behavior, and they had stopped him solely because of the expired registration. The And I, by the way, I don't know if I explained it correctly. They stop the vehicle. They actually bring the vehicle to a stop, and he parks in the handicapped spot as a result of them stopping him in the traffic stop. So the, he is driving on a public highway when they stop him. I feel like my explanation wasn't clear on that. Anyway, neither importantly, though, neither officer smell alcohol on the defendant or around him. He doesn't have a flushed, bloodshot eyes. He doesn't have a flushed face. His clothing and his appearance are normal. He's steady on his feet. He's responding coherently and appropriately to all the questions. He's not acting unusual in any way. But the officers go ahead and they search the vehicle, and they quickly find his gun, which was underneath the driver's seat. And at that point, the defendant decides this is not going well and takes off running. The police run after him. They capture him. They find almost $2,000 in cash. They then go back and finish searching the vehicle. They find cocaine. They find a scale with white residue. And as I indicated, he's a convicted violent felon, so this is not a good situation for him. He's got a lot of offenses. So the defendant moves to suppress. And the trial court listens to the evidence and makes a finding that the police had probable cause to search the vehicle for evidence that the defendant had been drinking while operating a motor vehicle. At that point, the defendant pleads guilty, but says, I want to appeal that issue, which you can do. You can say, I'm guilty, but I want to appeal the motion to suppress. And the Commonwealth, the court agrees, lets the defendant plead guilty, but appeal the issue. And he appeals to the Court of Appeals. And so the Court of Appeals considers this question of, did the officers have probable cause to search the vehicle for a violation of 18.2.323.1, based basically on this open container of liquor that was sitting on the floorboard. And the court starts out by looking at the statute and noting what we noted, which is that the offense prohibits consuming alcohol while driving on the Commonwealth's public highways. It doesn't prohibit, it doesn't criminalize possession of an open container in a vehicle. And one thing to note about this, I think it's interesting, just as an aside, is that it prohibits drinking a alcoholic beverage while on a public highway. But this is an offense under 18.2. It's a criminal offense. It's not a traffic offense. So it is an offense that is limited to public highways in Virginia, like most of the offenses in 46.2. But it's not contained in 46.2. It's contained in 18.2. And that's really interesting because normally in 18.2, the offenses are not limited to public highways. For example, DUI, right? DUI is not an offense that is limited to public highways. But this offense is. And again, the court here emphasizes that it doesn't criminalize possession of an open container in a vehicle. It just simply criminalizes drinking while on a public highway. The court then turns to the presumption, the rebuttable presumption, right? And remember what the presumption says. The presumption says there's a presumption that an open container is located within the passenger. The presumption is that there's a rebuttable presumption that the driver has consumed alcohol when the open container is located within the passenger or the vehicle, which it was in this case. The alcoholic beverage in the open container has at least been partially removed, which it was in this case. And the appearance, conduct, odor of alcohol, speech, or other physical characteristic of the driver of the motor vehicle may be reasonably associated with the consumption of an alcoholic beverage. Well, was that true in this case? We're going to have to look at that. Because the court says, yeah, the first two elements here are met, but the court finds the Commonwealth did not establish that third element, that the appearance, conduct, odor of alcohol, speech, or other physical characteristic of the driver may be reasonably associated with the consumption of an alcoholic beverage. Court notes here, his clothing and his appearance are normal. The officers did not detect the odor of alcohol. He didn't have physical characteristics that were reasonably associated with the consumption of alcohol. His eyes weren't bloodshot. His face wasn't flushed. He's steady on his feet. Remember, it's a trial court. When the court finds probable cause, when the trial court finds probable cause, the Virginia Beach Circuit Court finds probable cause, the Virginia Beach Circuit Court looks at his speech, his conduct, which the court finds provided the officer with a probable cause, but the Court of Appeals does not agree with that. The court here says his speech didn't provide probable cause to search because the court here says the officers both at the scene and during testimony expressed the belief that he might have a speech impediment. And in fact, after the arrest, not that it matters here because it's after the arrest, but he actually says one of the officers says to another officer, he has a speech impediment, I guess, before wondering after he'd already detained him if maybe his speech was connected to alcohol consumption. But they don't talk about speech, the defendant's speech, before searching the vehicle, at least with one another. And the court here itself said, the trial court here, the Virginia Circuit Court here said, I don't know if it's because he's drinking or he's got an issue or whatever, but his speech is odd. And so that's what the trial court had relied on. But here the court says that that's not enough evidence to giving rise to a probable cause that the defendant consumed alcohol while driving. The liquor bottle and odd speech gave officers a strong suspicion, and the court doesn't say reasonable suspicion here, but I think you can say strong suspicion is probably reasonable suspicion, that he'd been drinking while driving on a public highway. But the court here says strong suspicion is not probable cause. Because the open container alone wasn't illegal under 18.2.323, and there was no evidence that he'd consumed alcohol while driving, the court finds the officers did not have probable cause to search the vehicle for contraband or evidence of a crime leading to alcohol consumption, and the court finds that the search was unlawful and suppresses the evidence. Okay, so that's the end of the story, right? Not a very interesting story, frankly, and you may be wondering, why are we talking about this? What is so interesting about this case? I don't really think it's that interesting. Well, now here's the rest of the story. The same week, a different panel of judges considered the case of Durham versus Commonwealth. And Durham also possessed a firearm as a convicted felon and had that firearm concealed in a vehicle. And in Durham, the court affirms and finds that it was a lawful search of the vehicle based on the violation of Virginia Code 18.2.323.1. What happens in Durham? Well, Durham happens just one city over. It happens in Norfolk, not Virginia Beach, but Norfolk, but very close by. And also, by the way, you know, not very much different time. The case we talked about before was September of 2021. This case takes place in March of 2021. And this is a case in a high crime area in Norfolk where officers recognize that the defendant's car is parked at a housing complex that he usually patrols. It's not a vehicle that he usually sees there. And so he runs the tag and it comes back to Durham, whose license was suspended. The officer patrols the area, continues patrolling, and a half an hour later sees that vehicle, that same vehicle, now leaving the parking lot. And remember, he knows the registered owner has a suspended license. The vehicle stops on its own, and the officer sees four people inside, two passengers, a front passenger, and Durham driving the car. Durham is looking at the officer, and when the officer walks up to the vehicle, he can see that Durham is turning his body to the right and reaching towards the center console. And the officer can see Durham's arms, but not his hands, and he can see nobody else in the vehicle is moving at all. And remember here, by the way, under Knowles versus Iowa, it is lawful to stop a vehicle if you believe the driver is suspended, right? We do have a ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court about that. So the stop is lawful. But here, the officer signals for the vehicle to stop on that basis. So he's walking up to the car, and he can see Durham is twisting his body and towards the center console. Durham then brings his hands back to the front as the officer gets to the window. And the officer again sees an open bottle of alcohol, this time it's Hennessy, on the floorboard behind the driver's seat. So again, very similar to the last case. Durham rolls his window down and gives his ID, and now the officer can smell the odor of alcoholic beverage coming from inside the vehicle. He also sees a styrofoam cup in the center console, which you have a driver's side, passenger seat, and there's a center console in between with an armrest, and there's a cup holder in the armrest, and he can see a liquid in the cup. So the officer says, hey, what's in the cup? And the defendant just hands him the cup, and he can smell it. It appears to be liquor. He pours it out. The officer pours it out, and he goes back to his vehicle to confirm the license and identity. So he runs the information on the vehicle, and when he comes back, he asks the driver and the passenger, are there any weapons in the vehicle? And they all say no, and he says, all right, go ahead and get out of the vehicle. I'm going to search it for open containers of alcohol. And remember, of course, the officer can order everybody out of the vehicle anytime he, you know, for any particular reason, he's got control of that traffic stop. But here he orders them out of the vehicle because he's planning to open, to search the vehicle for open containers. In other words, he's made a decision that he's got probable cause to believe there's a violation of Virginia Code 18.2.323.1. And so after he gets them out of the vehicle, he observes another cup on, now it's on the driver's side of the console in that little cup holder. And again, it's got a liquid in it that smells like liquor. So the officer now takes out this cup and smells that. It's liquor. He pours that out again. And now he's continuing his search. And very quickly, he finds the defendant's handgun. And the... So he detains the defendant, reads him his Miranda. He finds out that the defendant's a convicted felon, and he's charged with possession of a firearm by convicted felon and possession of a concealed weapon. And so the trial defendant moves to suppress, and the trial court finds here that it was reasonable for the officer to search for a potential container of alcohol in the vehicle, denies the motion to suppress. The defendant... again, now he goes to trial, he's convicted, and he appeals, and we deal with the issue of the suppression. So here we are, back to the question of, was the search of the vehicle supported by probable cause to investigate a violation of Virginia Code 18.2.323.1, the violation of the offense of drinking while operating a motor vehicle? And here the court looks at it and says, well, no, look, let's look at the facts. Number one, when the officer's walking up to the vehicle, he can see the defendant turning his body away while looking directly at the officer as if he's trying to, you know, conceal something or hide something or do something to his right. And then the officer walks up, sees the open bottle of liquor, and he also sees a cup in the center console with the liquid in the vehicle. So then he pours it out, he gets everybody out of the car, and again, he sees another cup in the center console. So now we've got two different cups, center console, that have liquor in them. And so the court here says, well, if you've got two cups between the driver and the passenger, it's a fair inference that at least one of the cups belongs to the driver. And given that each alcoholic beverage was in an open cup, it's also a reasonable inference that it's there for immediate consumption. You're not transporting it. You put it in a cup because you're planning to drink it right now. And so the court here agrees. Like, we're talking about the offense of drinking while driving, not simply having an open container of the vehicle. But the court here says, yeah, agreed, but here a reasonable officer could conclude under the totality of the circumstances that the defendant had been drinking while driving and the vehicle contained evidence of that conduct, and therefore it was lawful to search the car. The court here also looks at this issue of, well, what about this presumption? What about this three-part presumption that the other case McEachin talked about? Because here, this case is decided by a 2-to-1 vote. Two judges find in this case, because it's heard by a panel of three judges, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Two judges believe the law search is lawful. One says it's not lawful. So the one judge who says it's not lawful dissents and says, I don't think this was a lawful search. And the dissent, just like in the other case, focuses on this presumption, this three-part presumption, that you get a presumption if somebody consumed an alcoholic beverage in violation of the section, if there's an open container, the open container has some removed alcohol, and the driver appears, either by their appearance, conduct, odor of alcohol, speech, or other physical characteristic, may be reasonably associated with the consumption of alcoholic beverage. And the court here says, yeah, that presumption is a issue for trial. That's how the Commonwealth can go about proving the case beyond a reasonable doubt. But it's not a required finding for probable cause. And if you think about it, right, if you were driving down the street and you look at somebody and they've got a can of beer, you know, a big 20, you know, 16 ounce can of beer or whatever, and they're drinking it and they look at you and you can see the beer can in their hand and they look at you while they're drinking it and they put it back on the console and you stop them, you're not worried about that presumption. You're not going through that whole section. You're like, no, I actually saw you drinking while driving, right? That's the evidence that I have. That's probable cause right there. The court here says the rebuttable presumption is not required to establish probable cause. And, you know, the court here says he's engaged in furtive movements. He's clearly hiding something. You've got the odor of alcoholic beverage coming from the vehicle, and you've got the physical bottle, and you've got the cups, and the cup's in plain view, and both cups are next to the driver. Sure, just like in McEachin, the court says, if all he saw was a bottle of liquor on the floorboard and nothing else, that's probably not going to give you probable cause of drinking while driving. And that's the ruling in the other case, the McEachin case from Virginia Beach earlier today. But here the court says it's still relevant to the tally of circumstances. And here it was not error to conclude there was probable cause to search the vehicle. And therefore, the search was lawful. Now, like I said, there's a dissent in this case, and Judge Lorish dissents. Judge Lorish basically makes the same argument here as the McEachin argument. They say, oh, he's got odd behavior, but there's not enough evidence to think he's driving, etc. So, you know, this is really interesting. You have two very conflicting rulings. And so I want to say a couple of things about this that I think can kind of help us understand this, contradiction in a sense. Number one is, it's not really a contradiction, and we'll come back to that in a second. I think you can say that these two cases are not directly in contradiction. But certainly the way they read that presumption is as 100% in contradiction. So, you know, how can that be? How can the Court of Appeals have two contradictory rulings? Well, one, both of these cases are called unpublished cases. Now, we don't talk about this a lot, the difference between a published case and an unpublished case. But the Court of Appeals can make rulings that are binding, that it's announcing is this is an official ruling of the Court of Appeals as binding on all courts in Virginia. And when they do that, they call it a published case. And, you know, there's a process for that, making that decision. Okay, this is going to be a published case. This is one that's going to control. We are announcing as a controlling piece of law for all of Virginia. Neither of these cases are published cases. They are what's called unpublished cases. These are cases essentially where the decision of the court is binding only for this particular case. And so why is it, you know, can we refer to it? Can we ever talk about it? Sure, we can refer to it. And we talk about a lot of unpublished cases here on this podcast. They're very influential. They are rulings of Court of Appeals judges. And a lot of times we treat them as not really binding, but we treat them as being significant, or they tell us what, you know, what the outcome should be in future cases. But they're not technically controlling cases, and the Court of Appeals could ignore them or go another way in a future case. So here, these two rulings, because they're both unpublished, because the Court of Appeals has decided they really only apply to the individual case they're ruling on, don't legally contradict each other because neither of them is binding on the Court of Appeals. And by the way, since they're in conflict, it could result in what's called an en banc ruling, which would be where you get all of the judges together to rule on the issue. We have 17 Court of Appeals judges in Virginia. These two cases were each decided only by a panel of three judges, because that's how we decide cases. You get a draw of three judges. We used to only have 11 judges in the Court of Appeals in Virginia, but in 2011, the General Assembly decided to expand the Court of Appeals significantly and give everyone a right to a Court of Appeals hearing. And it's interesting, you know, the panel that decided that the search was lawful, that was three judges, Humphreys, Huff, and Lorish. Humphreys and Huff voted to say that the search was lawful. Judge Lorish decided that the search was not lawful. So Judge Humphreys was a career prosecutor. He was head of the Association of Commonwealth Attorneys. He was a special assistant U.S. attorney. He was voted to the bench in 2000. He's been on the Court of Appeals since the year 2000. And Judge Huff, who also denied the motion to suppress, he became a judge. He was a lawyer for 35 years, and he became a Court of Appeals judge in 2011. So both these are the two judges of the six we've talked about today that thought the search was lawful. Judge Lorish, who dissented in the Virginia Beach case, in the Norfolk case, I apologize, was elected to the Court of Appeals in 2021 when the General Assembly expanded the Court of Appeals from 11 to 17 judges, and Judge Lorish had been a public defender. In the three judges who voted in the Virginia Beach case to suppress the evidence, two of those judges were also part of that new class of judges picked by the General Assembly when they were doing their sort of criminal justice reform, legal reform session in 2021, Judge Friedman and Judge Causey. Judge Causey was a career legal aid attorney, and that was, you know, again, intentional on the part of the General Assembly. The House Majority Leader said, you know, I think it's important to have a diversity of perspectives. Senator Edwards said he said it's truly historic. We're going to make a huge difference in the court. I hope we can bend the court to a more balanced court by including more public defenders, the legal aid attorney, Judge Causey, people who had backgrounds that were more defendant friendly in the eyes of Senator Surivel, who said, you know, tendency towards putting prosecutors in the bench had led to real world consequences for defendants, limiting judges' discretion. And so they wanted, they said, I don't think there's any question the court would benefit from having more members with experience in criminal defense. Judge Laura says, you know, she would bring her experience, you know, to defending people with few resources to the bench. Judge Causey talked about representing a constituency of people who were disenfranchised and marginalized. So you have a lot of people with that experience, and that class of that new class that came in 2021 as part of that criminal justice reform, that's, you know, the judges who were voting to suppress the evidence, whereas sort of the old school judges, Judge Humphreys, Judge Huff, are the ones who are voting that there is probable cause and finding that there is probable cause here. En banc, the whole judges together, 17 of them could vote together on this issue. I don't know if it's that important of an issue that they're going to come in, but you definitely have some different perspectives. So, two cases on a relatively minor topic, but I think it helps us to understand a lot about the Court of Appeals and how it works in 2023. I hope today was interesting. Please tell, if you like the podcast, tell your friends. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Stitcher, SoundCloud, which is a website. You don't even need a web browser. I understand Stitcher might be going away, so I may have to get Spotify going quicker than ever. If you don't like the podcast, don't tell your friends. But thanks for hanging out today. Stay safe, and don't get captured.